Strange as it may sound, the US Senate Commerce Committee is to vote today on a bill that would make it illegal for American airlines to comply with a European Union law on carbon emissions. Well, under the EU directive, all airlines flying into Europe will have to get permits to cover their carbon emissions for the whole length of a flight, and they'd have to monitor the emissions. They'd get 80% of the permits for free, but the remaining 15% would be paid for. Right now, the EU is only monitoring emissions, but from April next year, companies will start having to pay. Earlier this year, China and India snubbed the scheme by refusing to supply any pollution data. John Strickland is director at air transport consultancy JLS Consulting. Good morning.
Morning.
So let's get this right. A bunch of American lawmakers could say to the airlines, it's illegal to comply with this law, while the EU says it's illegal to flout it. So they're damned if they do and damned if they don't.
Absolutely. It leaves the airlines between a rock and a hard place. And we've seen that China and India are already doing this. But what we've got to look at in the next couple of days as this voting takes place is that really there's an effort to break the logjam. The EU brought this scheme in at the beginning of this year out of a sense of frustration. They argued that the UN-sponsored body called ICAO, which is the International Civil Aviation Organization, had 10 years or so to do something about this and, in their view, had done nothing. So they brought the scheme in unilaterally. It's drawn an enormous amount of flak around the globe, and really today is about putting pressure to try to move that along towards this deadline that you mentioned next spring when airlines actually have to start paying.
This is an extreme reaction, isn't it, by US politicians? It's a really bitter row. Do you think it could lead to a trade war?
Well, at its worst, we could start getting fines, because if airlines are in this position finding they have no choice whether they pay or don't pay, somebody's going to come after them with fines and retribution, or we go even further and get flight bans and access to airspace being banned around the world. It's going to help nobody, of course. Airlines.
So it could affect passengers in the end.
It would affect passengers. It would actually affect global economies, because of course aviation is a fundamental part of a 21st century economic life, and that's where nobody wants to actually go. So there has to be a move to actually break the logjam and find a diplomatic solution.
So the US government departments are meeting today with the UN's aviation body that you described earlier to come up with a global emissions scheme, not just in Europe, which would be acceptable to everybody. How would that look? What would it look like?
We don't know what format would take as yet. Various different scenarios have been looked at. It's quite possible that the actual scheme which has been introduced by the EU could be enlarged to encompass the whole world. It's simply a matter of that this is so complex. We're talking about first world countries, emerging economies, those countries who rely on tourism, others that don't. They're all impacted to a greater or lesser extent by air travel, and they've all got their own agendas. ICAO is trying to, in some respects, bang heads together and find a way of unifying a view so we do actually get progress. Now, IATA, which is the airline representative body, is also pushing to have this global approach. It probably will happen, but it's going to take a lot longer than the deadline of paying under the EU scheme when that comes in the spring.
But if it's going to be acceptable to everybody, would it end up being a watered-down version of the EU scheme?
Well, all airlines, I think, want to play their part in reducing global emissions. If we just look at orders for new generation aircraft, which burn considerably less fuel, they're actually booked up in terms of manufacturing slots for the next few years. So airlines want this. They just want to have a level playing field. It is complex to get there. Whether we get a perfect solution is anybody's guess at the present time. But to just keep having this stalemate situation with the EU is equally unacceptable.
But it is going to be messy, particularly if this vote goes through in the US.
It will be messy, and I think now we have to look at, the clock is ticking, because the scheme is in place, but the payments begin next year, so we've arguably got 7 or 8 months in which to make progress. In recent months, since the scheme's been in place, ICAO has made progress, but there's a lot more to do before we get to a satisfactory solution.
Many thanks, John Strickland from JLS Consulting. If you're a small business and you want to use a picture, a video or a music clip in your business, you might just think it's more trouble than it's worth because of the difficulties and the expense of dealing with copyright. Well, one idea for solving this is a so-called Copyright Hub, a not-for-profit database where businesses could go to work out who has to pay what for the use of audiovisual material. Former Deputy Chairman of Ofcom Richard Hooper has been given the job of deciding whether this sort of hub is feasible by the Business Secretary Vince Cable, and he joins me now. Richard Hooper, what is the basic problem and how would this hub work?
Well, good morning. You've explained it extremely well. Copyright licensing was really designed in the analogue age. in that world long ago. It is now needs to be fit for purpose for the digital age, which we're right in the middle of. And it's got to be easier to use. It's got to be simpler. It's got to be more accessible, more transparent. And also the transaction cost of licensing has got to come down. And thus we move to the world of automated licensing in order for... It's mostly about the high volume of small transactions we talked about, whereas in the analog world, it was the opposite. There was a small volume of high-value transactions. So that's the world that we're talking about. And as you say, small businesses, also individual users. I mean, people now routinely post stuff on YouTube. They are using licensable content. People want music on their wedding videos. I mean, there are so many examples of small uses. If they are easier to license, then the pot is larger, and the pot going to creators is also larger.
So, say I'm a teacher, and I don't know whether I can show a video to my pupils. Would I go to the Copyright Hub, and would I then get charged a fee for that?
Well, I'm not going to talk about the funding of it and the costs, and I think the answer to your question, or that specific question, would be no. But if you take a teacher, I mean, first of all, they want to get the point about copyright across to students and to pupils. And one of the suggestions that was made to us in one of our meetings was that Johnny, who is age 10, has written a story, and so the teacher says, well, of course, you can now... I mean, that is now your copyright because you've written it, and we're now going to go into the hub together, and you're going to register your rights on the hub. And that, I think that would get through to the child or the student much more quickly than a sort of abstract education about copyright.
Now, you reckon that this would actually stimulate the growth of creative industries. Isn't that a bit of a big ask? How would it do that?
Well, it does it by making sure that all the small volume transactions that I've talked about are actually captured, and quite a lot of them actually happen. I mean, what happens at the moment is because it is difficult, people either don't use the image, they don't use the piece of text, or they use a pirated version of it. And what this is trying to do is to get more legal uses of copyrighted content by that to what we call the long tail of small users.
Now, you said you didn't want to talk about who's going to pay for it, but surely that is a huge question if you have to collate the vast amounts of data about who owns what in one place.
Yes.
You have to ask who's going to pay for it.
Well, when I said I wasn't going to willing to pay for it, I mean, obviously the setting up of the hub has got major funding issues, governance issues, all sorts of IT issues. As you said, it'll be a not-for-profit organisation. Clearly, there will be some fee structure, but that all very much lies ahead. What we want to establish is the idea, get support for it, and the industries, the audiovisual industry, music publishing and images industry, are thoroughly supportive of it, thoroughly supportive that this should be industry-led and industry-funded, and there could be some government pump priming, as I mentioned in the report.
And very briefly, how long before it gets set up?
I would think that this will take something like a year to get going because it's a major IT project and it requires a lot of people collaborating and working together.
Richard Hooper, thanks very much for joining us. The market numbers, in fact. Last night on Wall Street, the Dow Jones ended down 3 points at 13,073. The FTSE 100 ended up 66 points at 5,694. In Tokyo, the Nikkei is currently up 54 at 8,690. A pound will buy you $1.57 or €1.28, making €1 worth 78 pence. My markets guest is Justin Urquhart-Stewart, the co-founder and director of Seven Investment Management. Justin, welcome. That supposed Olympics boost for tourism we were hearing in the newspaper review earlier. The FT is suggesting that London's turned into a ghost town. Some of visitors are staying away. One theatre CEO says, "We are bleeding, darling."
I think it's very questionable indeed, because you've seen an awful lot of people obviously going to the Olympics. But actually, when you actually see the centre of town in terms of shopping, actually there aren't that many people around in comparison. Tourists will have been, I think, really rather concerned about, well, if we're going there, it's going to be dominated by the Olympics. And this was something that was warned about some months ago.
US Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner is urging Europe to do whatever it takes to save the euro. Surprised that America's getting involved now?
Well, I think it's interesting when you look at the timing of it. Here we are, we're going to the dog days of August. Remember this time last year when we actually had that surprise S&P downgrade on American debt, when suddenly the world found out America had a debt problem. What a surprise. And the markets fell some 20%. I get the distinct impression by the time we've had Mr. Draghi, Ms. Merkel, Hollande, and of course now Geithner, all coming up with warm, cuddly words to say we're going to do everything that's necessary during August. Well, it's worth words, not actions. So maybe to try and keep things going, but I'm afraid that doesn't actually resolve the underlying issues that we need progress on the euro, and particularly with regard to its operation and also to the growth of the eurozone economies.
But the markets did rally, didn't they? Particularly when the ECB president, Mario Draghi, signalled that the ECB was ready to do what it takes.
Yes.
What are they expecting now?
Well, they would like to see some more firm action in terms of real support. But at the moment, these are warm, cuddly words. And it's good to have. And that's what you need to have, is some leadership. But fundamentally, we've still got the question of Greece to be dealt with. And the Troika will be reporting. And Greece, I suspect, will not be coming up to expectations. And we will need to be having some actions. And frankly, by the time we get to September, the markets will have, I think, lost patience. So they need to be careful. Don't just rely on these warm words for too long.
Justin, Manchester United has set the terms of its stock market launch, plans to raise as much as £210 million in New York. What do you make of the valuation, and why isn't it in the UK?
Well, exactly. This has been floated more often than the duck in my bath, as far as I can work out. It's not going very far. They failed in the Far East, and now they're trying in New York. The money was apparently going to be doing to pay down the debt, about £190 million to be raised, obviously in dollars, to pay down a debt of some £423 million. Now we're actually told only half's going to go to the debt, the rest goes to the Glazier family. So I'm afraid, although this may potentially then put the valuation of the company at some £3.3 billion, frankly, when you look at how they're managing at the moment, I do regard this as somewhat of a corporate disgrace.